All right. So we are holding on Kuf Dalad Omud Aleph by the two dots, the five lines from the bottom of the Omud.
And officially?
Today's daf is really supposed to be Kuf Hey. So we're not that, we're Kuf Vav rather. So we're not that far behind, but, you know, over time. Okay. So we started talking about the dinim of Basa B'Cholov. The first thing we said was that we said that you're not allowed, that Basa B'Cholov, our mission had said, applies to any kind of meat, meaning whether we're talking from domestic animals, wild animals, or birds. We thought that that maybe doesn't go like Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva says that only with domestic animals is it also Me'afayra. Then we said that's one possibility, is maybe the Mishnah is like Rebbe, who disagrees with Rabbi Akiva on that point. The other possibility is we said that fine, all of them are authors, some of them Daraisa, some of them Dirabban. The Mishnah is not getting at this point into the question which ones are Daraisa, which ones are Dirabban. So now comes the next piece. The Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had said, besides that you're not allowed to cook them together, you're not allowed to put meat and cheese on the same table, except, again, we said, for this purpose, fish and locusts don't count as meat, but everything else does. So Rav Yosef says, evidently, the implication of this is that the issur of cooking and eating chicken or other birds' meat with milk must be also Daraisa. Because if you're going to tell me that, it's only also drabanan, then you have to think, achila gufa gzeira. After all, even eating them together is only a gzeira, because if you're going to say it's drabanan, because you might mix up, if you're allowed to eat bird's meat, if you're allowed to eat chicken with milk, then you may come to eat actual meat with milk, and you want meat from animals, that is, and you won't realize. So if that itself is a gzeira, v'anan nigzer Allah atu achila, would we chachamim then go and make a gzeira that you shouldn't put them on the table, because if you put them on the table, you might come to eat them, even when there was on the gzeira on top of a gzeira. We don't do that. So the question is, okay, so the Gemara asks, where do you get as such an obvious fact that we don't make a gzera on top of a gzera? Now, Tosfos points out that actually there are a number of places in Shas where the Gemara takes that as an obvious fact. So why all of a sudden over here is the Gemara, why all of a sudden is the Gemara concerned about it over here and asking whether, and asking how do we know this concept? Tosfos says generically that you can't really compare different Zeras Dirabanan have different strengths. Sometimes we do find that the Chachamim make a Zera on a Zera, and very often the Gemara will say on that that it's really all one Zera, or along the lines of that if you didn't have the secondary Zera, then the primary one would fall apart also. People would get careless with the primary Zera. So Tosfos just says generically you can't really compare the gzeiras of Chachamim one to the other. Here the Gemara is going to prove from a different case involving Chala that you don't make a gzeira on a gzeira, but you can't necessarily generalize from that to other places. Because the Gemara is comparing them over here, therefore we know that they're comparable. But if not for that, we might have thought that maybe in this case it would be appropriate to make a gzeira of gzeira. For example, because without the second zeta, the first zeta wouldn't work. Right. Okay. So one zeta altogether. So that's the thing. And effectively, it would amount to one zeta. You're not allowed to have that chicken and milk. You're not allowed to have them anything to do with each other. Not to have them on the same table and not to eat them. Okay. Anyway, so how do we know that? Midaraisa, according to the way we're assuming now, so Rabbi Yosef is saying, evidently the implication must be that it is actually also to have chicken with milk daraisa. Therefore, the Chachamim can make a gzera, don't put them on the same table. If the whole issur to eat them, to cook them and eat them together was only dirabanan, then they wouldn't make a gzera on a gzera. So now the Gemara is asking, how do we know that concept, that you don't make a gzera on a gzera? Which again, sometimes the Gemara takes it as a given that you don't. Sometimes the Gemara instead wonders about whether we should. This is one of those places where the Gemara wonders about it. Okay, so how do we know that not? It's not. So like this, we learn in a Mishnah and Challah. Challah schutz la'aretz. Now you have like this. Min ha-Torah, Challah is applicable only in Eretz Yisrael. Midrabanan, it's applicable outside Eretz Yisrael also. Midrabanan is applicable outside Eretz Yisrael also. You have a couple of Rishonim who learn that it's only applicable in the country near Eretz Yisrael. You have others who say that it's applicable all over the world. That's how we're knowing. why it is that it applied, why it is that the Chachamim applied it only to challah rather than to the other mitzvah tafluis ba'aretz is also a bit of discussion. One reason has to do with the fact that that challah applies more broadly to people because, in order, for example, all the other mitzvah tafluis ba'aretz, peya and leket and ma'aserishin and ma'asersheni and so forth, only apply in the field. Challah applies even if you don't have a field, as long as you have dough, and everybody eats bread. So therefore, there may have been a reason for the Chachamim to say more broadly that we should keep challah even outside Eretz Yisrael. Okay, be that as it may, the fact is we do take challah outside Eretz Yisrael, but there are various leniencies in it.
What will we think that it should not be taken out?
Because it's on the face of it, it's a mitzvah tloya ba'aretz. Just as it only applied like most of the mitzvahs like all the mitzvahs tloya ba'aretz, it only applied once the Jewish people entered Eretz Yisrael. It didn't exist before that. While they were in the midbar, even if they had grain, they were not obligated to take challah from the dough that they made. Only when they came into Eretz Yisrael. So it is a mitzvah tloya ba'aretz. And just like if a yid owns a farm outside Eretz Yisrael or a tree or whatever, you don't take ma'aser from it. You don't have to leave payah for the poor, etc. So why should challah be different? So one reason that's given is, again, because challah in any case is a more widespread thing since it applies even if you don't have a field at all. Okay. Anyway, so you have challah put ba'aretz. Now, but again, the whole thing only exists d'rabbanan. So therefore, the din is, the Mishnah says, necheles im azor al shulchan, a kohen is allowed to eat it at the same table with a zor, without the problem, without the potential. Now, if it was challah d'oraisa, you wouldn't be able to do that, because a zor is also to eat challah. It's like truma in that regard. But like this, since it's only also d'rabbanan, then therefore we don't make a zera on top of that zera.
We wouldn't be allowed.
Okay, if it's challah d'oraisa, then yes, your kohen is not allowed to eat it with a zor at the same table, unless they make some kind of separation so that the zor knows not to eat from it. But here, because it's only challah d'rabbanan, then you're allowed to. And also, the Mishnah mentions another din at it, v'nitenes l'chol kohen shigirsa. Also, you're allowed to give the challah that was taken outside Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to give it to any kohen you want. Now, challah has to be eaten b'tara, but again, challah of Eretz Yisrael, because it applies d'oraisa, therefore the kohen has to be completely tahor in order to eat it. Challah of chutz la'aretz, in principle, a kohen is allowed to eat it as long as it's not called truma yotza olam migufo, as long as there's no truma coming out of his actual body. In other words, for example, he's not a balkari or a zav or what have you. If he's a tummy mess, in principle, he's allowed to. That Amram writes actually that in his times the Kohenim still had the minhag to eat challah of chutz la'aretz. Today I'm not aware of anybody who does that. But okay, anyway, the point is, again, because it's challah of chutz la'aretz, and therefore we don't have to be so worried about keeping it b'tara because it only applies d'oraisa anyway, therefore you're allowed to give it to any Kohen you want. So Rashi says that means you're even allowed to give it to a Kohen in Amar Oretz. Challah of Eretz Yisrael, you could. Challah of Eretz Yisrael, you can only give to a kohen who is going to be careful to keep it tatara, which is only a chaver. Challah of chutz la'aretz, you can give to an ama aretz. You don't have to worry that he's careless with tumah tatara because it's only d'rabbanan. That's the point of Rashi. Tosfos learns a little differently. We're talking about it in principle. If you have a choice, you should still be giving it, even in chutz la'aretz, to a kohen with a chaver. So either there's no kohen chaver around, or you could have, let's say, for example, that the kohen chaver doesn't want to take your challah because he doesn't need it anyway, because he has enough food of his own. So therefore, in that case, then fine, then you have a kohen. And I'm like, oh, look, you have a mitzvah to give him to doctor anyway. So either way, you're going to have to give him something, either challah or truma. So therefore, the point is that you're allowed to give it to him. But that's only in an outside Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, you would have to give it to a chaver. Okay.
Challah
meaning the piece of challah that you take off. No. Nowadays, we burn it, but in place. We bake a certain amount of dough. Then. Okay. All right. So therefore, the point is we see from that Mishnah that you're allowed to eat challah of chutz la'aretz on the same table as a zor. We don't make a zera that the zor may come to eat it. So we see that you don't make a zera for a zera. Since the whole concept of challah of chutz la'aretz is a bonum, we don't make another zera on top of that. Okay. Amalei Abayas. Abayas says, to Rabbi Yosef, that's not really a valid proof. B'shlema iyash menin challah chutz la'aretz ba'aretz. If the Mishnah had talked about a case where you took challah that was taken from a dough outside Eretz Yisrael, and then you brought it to Eretz Yisrael, and the question is, can a kohen eat it with the same table with a zor? We're then on the face of it, you might have thought you should make a zera, because once it's in Eretz Yisrael, people aren't going to realize whether this is challah or chutzlar versus from Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, people, you would think you should have to make a zera, that if you're allowed to eat it with a zor on the same table, you may come to do the same thing with challah of Eretz Yisrael. And yet, v'loy gazrinin, but we see we don't make such a zera. Good. Well then, ikal mishmamino, so then you can prove from that that you don't make a zera for a zera. But in this case over here, all the Mishnah is telling us is challah chutzlar. It's implying that we're talking about the challah is still outside Eretz Yisrael. Well, in that case, the reason is, you know why, if the challah remains in chutzlar, that's why you're not making a zera. Not because you don't make a zera for a zera, because there's no sense in making a zera. What would be the point? The point, you're not allowed to eat this challah chutzlar at a table with a zera because in Chutzlaris, because in Eretz Yisrael you may forget and do the same thing. You're in Chutzlaris, you're the other people are in Eretz Yisrael. There's no reason to think that people are going to get mixed up from one place to another. So that doesn't necessarily prove that you don't make a Zeyr al-Zeyr. But in our case, as far as meat and cheese on the same table, you could argue that it's not really a zera. It's rather, it's a gzera that protects the case. You could argue that bisar ois b'cholav, that chicken with milk, or any other bird meat with milk is only drabanan. Not like Rabbi Yosef wanted to say, evidently it's deraita, and that's why we make a gzera not to put them on the same table. You could argue it is drabanan, but you're not trying to protect people from eating chicken with milk, which would be a gzera or gzera, but rather you're trying to protect them from eating milk, from eating regular meat, regular meat, animal meat with milk, because chicken is very similar to that. If you allow him to put chicken and cheese on the same table, then he's likely to, by the same logic, figure that he can put regular meat, animal meat, and cheese on the same table. And eventually he's going to come to eat basar b'cholav, which is deraisa. So you can argue it's not really a case of a gzera l'gzera. You can argue bird meat with milk is only also drabanan, but we make a zera not to put them on the table, not so much because you may come to eat them together, but because you may come to do the same thing with regular meat. Okay.
You start with the chicken, and then
you're going to do the same thing with meat, right? So the question is now, though, Rabbi Yosef's premise of the question is that putting meat and cheese on the same table, if we were talking about meat that's also daraisa, namely definitely animal meat, definitely meat from domestic animals, and Rabbi Yosef is arguing also meat from birds, would be also daraisa. You could come to an issa daraisa from that. The master thought of Sheshes. Rav Sheshes asks him that, how would you come to a daraisa anyway? So, cloning the cloning food. After all said and done, you're talking about cold meat, cold cheese. So what's the problem? The pashtus, if you're talking about putting them on the table, you're not necessarily talking about they're so hot that they're going to cook together. So therefore, one second, that's what we're going to explain. But on the face of it, we could be equally, the Mishnah is saying generically you can't put them on the table. In other words, it doesn't matter the temperature. So implying that even if they were both cold, you would have an issur. Even if you're going to say that chicken and milk is also daraisa, so what? Even if you were to eat chicken and milk together when they were both cold, you're not over on an issur. Even if you argue that chicken is also daraisa, it still wouldn't be an issur daraisa because they're not hot. So what's the problem?
The problem is same way we said people might
come. The answer is Omer Abaya Gzeira Shemiyala Beilpus Reseach. The answer is that you might bring it to the table in a hot pot. So the question is soif. Okay, but so what? After all, even if you bring it in a hot pot. Even if, let's say, for example, you bring a hot pot of meat to the table and then you put some cheese in it, after all, it's a cliché, because we have to realize an ilpas is not necessarily the kind of pot that you actually cooked in. Let's remember, it comes up in Hilchos Shabbos, it's going to come up in our perek in connection with basar b'cholav. You have the kli rishon, which is the actual pot that you cooked in on the fire. And that can be al ha'esh, it's on the fire, or you can have it off the fire. but they still consider a pre-chain. And then you have, you pour from that into another container, and that second, that other container is a pre-chain. The ilpas that we're talking about over here is the pastor's a pre-chain. We're talking about a serving, a serving thing that you bring to the table. You don't necessarily bring the original cooking pot to it. Well, ilpas means, you know, what do you mean? That's why it's called ilpas. No. Okay. So therefore, so the gzera is, you might bring it in a hot pot, in a hot serving dish, that is, but the question is, so what, a serving dish is only a kli sheni, or kli sheni any mabashal? A kli sheni doesn't cook things. Now, as far, one second. So actually, Mefarshim say, evidently you see from the Gemara, since the Gemara is not making any distinctions, apparently, even if it's very, very hot, the Gemara is taking as a given that it can't cook. Now, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, we make various distinctions in that. Among other things, we make a distinction between Dover Gush, when you have something solid in there, where therefore it retains its heat, even in a cliché-y, versus when you're talking about liquids, which lose their, where they lose their heat much more rapidly. But over here, we're talking about the dinim of Lois Tavashog Jiba Chalevima, which is somewhat different than the dinim of cooking on Shabbos. The Gemara is taking it as a given over here, that a cliché-y is not able to cook them to the extent that it should be also Daraisa. So yes, maybe it'll be also, maybe the Gemara is not differentiating here as far as Basa B'Cholam. We're not talking about Hilchos Shabbos over here. But there is actually some discussion among the poskim about these points, where, to what extent, what exactly do we say is and isn't Mevashel when it comes to Basa B'Cholam. So again, there can be things that are also Drabbanon, even if they're not also Daraisa. And there is, by the way, an argument that's made even in Hilchos Shabbos. Maybe when we say that there's a problem putting things in a kli sheni on Shabbos, maybe that's also only Drabbanon. Maybe Daraisa, actually, there wouldn't be a problem unless it's a kli rishon. Which the Gemara sees. Okay, so again, what would be the problem? El Gzera, Shemayala B'ilpos Rishon. No, rather, we have to say the Gzera is that he might put, that he might bring, for example, meat to the table in an ilpas rishon, the actual pot that had been on the fire, and then he took it off it, and now when it's on the table, he's going to put cheese in it, and then you're going to have your cooking on it, and then it's definitely cooking on a daraisa level, as long as it's the absolute level.
Is that the halacha, by the way, for Asak Shabbos? You can put it on the table?
No, so that's what we're saying. You're not supposed to put... No, one second. So we're saying you're not supposed to put meat and cheese on the table, regardless what their temperatures are, because you may come to do the same thing when they're hot, when they're in a clean condition, and then you would be over on the Isidore.
Not because of Tarobus.
No, it is because of Tarobus. We're talking Bas B'Cholam over here, which is a type of Tarobus. So therefore, we're saying, don't put them on the same table even when they're cold, because if you bring them on the table when they're cold, then you're likely to make a mistake and do the same thing when they're hot and even in the original pot that was on the fire. Okay. Mishnah says, Ha'oif olo magzina l'shulchan v'einin nechol. So now we said in the previous Mishnah that you are not allowed to put meat on the table with milk, and the Mishnah had said generically meat, which meant the pashtos, in other words, chicken as well. So now we see there's a machlokas about it. Beit Shammai says you're allowed to put chicken together with cheese on the table. The Einem Nechol, you're just not allowed to eat them together. Divrei Beit Shammai, that's what Beit Shammai says. Or Beit Shulul says you're not allowed to put them on the table together, and you're not allowed to eat them together. Beit Shulul is more machmir. Amar Rav Yosi, Zumi Kula Beit Shammai. Amar Rav Yosi, Zumi Kula Beit Shammai Machome Beit Shulul. So Rav Yosi says, yes, this is one of the cases where Beit Shammai is Mekel and Beit Shulul is machmir. Now, what is Rav Yosi adding by that? We'll see in the Gemara. Okay. Yes, you would think it's obvious. So therefore, the Gemara is going to explain what Rav Yosi is adding. Okay. The Eza Shulchan Amru, which table are we talking about? The Shulchan Sh'Oichel Olav, we're talking about the actual table that you eat at. Abu the Shulchan Sh'Soder Olav is a Tavshil, but when it comes to the buffet that you put out the dishes on, and then people come and take, or from there you take and serve to the table, whatever. Then you can put milk and meat dishes next to each other and you don't have to worry about it, because you're not going to come to eat them together because nobody eats directly off the buffet. Obviously, as long as there's no problem of bit scattering from one to the other, we're talking about. Gemara asks Rav Yosi, Haina Tanakama. Isn't Rav Yosi saying the same thing as the Tanakama? The Tanakama had told us Bishamah and Bithul's opinions. Rav Yosi seems to just be saying the very obvious fact that means Bishamah is Mekel and Bithul is Machma. What is he adding? V'chitema achila gufa ika binayu. So you're going to say maybe the difference is maybe Tanakama and Rav Yosi are arguing about the actual eating, whether they argue about that as well. Namely, the Tanakhama would say they are arguing about putting them on the table together, but the Shama and the Sula would both agree you can't eat them together. And then Rabbi Yossi would be coming and saying, no, you should know not only as far as putting them on the table, but even as far as eating them together, the Shama is maple and saying that you can eat chicken and milk together, and the Sula is saying that not. The problem with that is, Vahatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shisha Dvarim Mikula Bishamayim Ozotnan, really actually it's Mishnah and Aegis, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shisha Dvarim Mikula Bishamayim Ochomer Bishilol, there are six cases where Bishamay is Mekel and Bishilol is Machmer. Now, Rashi points out, there are actually a lot of other ones. The first couple of Prakim of Aegis list the number of cases where Bishamay is Mekel and Bishilol is Machmer. Rabbi Yossi is saying six. I don't remember. No, there's more than that. But anyway, the point is, these six, Rabbi Yossi holds that the Shama is Mekel, but the other Chachamim disagreed with him. Many times we'll have that whether Bishama or Bishul had a machlokas on something, and what exactly the machlokas is itself the subject of a machlokas in a later generation.
So we wanted to include only one.
So therefore, sort of, in other words, first in ADS it starts talking about over there the ones that everybody agrees that Bishama is Mekel. Later on, you have Rabbi Yossi and also other Tanoim who give their own list, meaning in other words, we agree with the list that you said so far, and we're adding another six or another however many.
That we didn't include.
Which. So, and one of them is the Zuach of Man, and one of them is the one of our Mishnah. That you're allowed to put chicken together with cheese on the same table. You're just not allowed to eat them together. So says the Shammai. Bitzilu says you can't put them on the table together, and you can't eat them together. So we see Rabbi Yossi clearly says that the Shammai also says you can't eat it. So there's no actual point of machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama in our Mishnah. Ella, Hawk, Mashmalon. No. So why is the Mishnah telling us, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Zumi, Kula Bishamayim, Mechomer Bishilol? The Mishnah wants to inform us, Man Tanakama Rabbi Yossi. You should know, who is the Tanakama of our Mishnah? That is Rabbi Yossi. And the reason why it's important to know that, Kala Omer Dava B'Shem Omer, maybe Gola La'olam, anybody, as it says in Kirsay Abbas, anybody who says over something in the name of the one who said it, Divai Torah, in the name of someone who says it, maybe Gola La'olam brings Gola to the world, Shenema, as it says in the Megillah, very appropriate, Zman Grama, La'Toma Esther La'Melech B'Shem Mordechai, that Esther told the king about in the name of Mordechai, about Big Son and Teresh's plot. B'Shem Mordechai, in the name of Mordechai, that's the point. So therefore, it's important for us to know that when we say in our Mishnah that B'Shamai holds, you're allowed to put them on the table and not eat them, and B'Shamai holds neither one, you should know Rabbi Yossi is the one who's saying that. We would know that from the Mishnah in Adias, but our Mishnah wants to point that out also, and therefore it brings Rabbi Yossi telling us that you should know this is one of the cases where B'Shamai is made. Okay, more on this topic of chicken or bird meat in general. Oif is the term the Gemara is using, which means birds in general. A lot of times I'll probably just translate it as chicken, because realistically, that's when we think of bird meat, that's what we eat pretty much. Chicken, maybe turkey, whatever. Okay, anyway. Okay, Tona Agra Chamur de Rab Abba. Agra, the father-in-law of Rab Abba, taught a braisa as follows. Chicken and cheese can be eaten ba'apikoden. Ba'apikoden, Rashi says, means derech hefker. They can be eaten in a hefkerdik way. In other words, you don't have to be so careful about the distinction between them. Now, what do we mean by that? Obviously not. The Shabbat Tillel says that no. Who Tony law who Omer law? So Agra taught this Braisa. This is how he taught the Braisa in the words that he had learned from his Rebbe, Nechol and Bapi Koren, Vuhu Amalah, and he also explained with his own Svara, what does Api Koren mean? In other words, he had learned from his Rebbe and Bapi Koren, and Rashi says, they hadn't specified what it means that you can eat them Bapi Koren. But Agra himself, being a Talmud Chacham, he realized, obviously, it can't mean you can eat them indiscriminately, you can eat them together. Obviously not, because we had the Tillel telling us you can't. So what does it mean? So he explained on his own svara, it means below the tilos yadayim below kinuach hapeh. It means you don't have to wash your hands and you don't have to clean out your mouth. You don't have to clean out your mouth in between one and the other. Now, so Rashi learns that like this, that Agra is saying if you ate animal meat, then you do have to have kinuach v'hadocha, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, because that sticks to the inside of your mouth much more, the fat and the grease and whatever, and bits of it get stuck between the teeth, etc. Therefore, for that, you definitely need kinuach v'adocha, as the Gemara is going to explain soon. However, Agra is saying when it comes to chicken and cheese, then you don't need that kind of thing because it doesn't get stuck so much. It doesn't get stuck so much inside your mouth. You have a number of other explanations that Rishonim give. What exactly Agra is saying over here? First of all, among other things, is Agra indeed talking about that we're talking about either order, whether we're talking he ate chicken and afterwards he wants to eat cheese, or vice versa, that no kinuach v'hadocha is necessary. So we said that Rashi apparently holds that way. Tosfos also that it means that Agra is saying either way it would be mutter, but only with chicken again because it doesn't stick as much to the your mouth as meat, right? That's the point. According to Rashi, it comes out that Agra is saying even if you ate chicken, you don't need anything else before you eat cheese, right? Although with a caveat, the Gemara will say in a minute that depends whether your hands are greasy from the chicken or from the cheese, as the case may be. But okay. But anyway, so that's one way of looking at it. Tosfos discusses it a bit. Tosfos brings from Halachos Gedolos even when we say further on in the sugya that after you ate meat you're not allowed to eat cheese, that would mean without the tilu of the kinuach. That would mean without, unless you wash your hand, unless you wash and rinse out your mouth and clean out your mouth and whatever it's going to say. But if you were to do that, then you actually wouldn't have to wait, as the Gemara we're going to discuss soon about the amount of time you have to wait. But that's another way of looking at it.
You would not have to wait.
That's what Tosfos is bringing from Halachas Gedolos. So wait, hold on. Let's learn a little bit, okay? So first of all, that's one thing that Tosfos brings from Halachas Gedolos. When we say that if you ate meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese, and bologna tilu v'kinuach, that means without washing or cleaning out in between, avim the tilu v'kinuach shari. And ochal grinim mutar le'achol baser. And on the other hand, if you ate cheese, you'd be allowed to eat meat af bologna tilu v'kinuach. So that's the Halachas Gedolos. Although Tosfos disagrees with that. Another way of understanding Agra, though, is he's only talking about if you ate cheese and afterwards you want to eat chicken. If you were to eat chicken and afterwards cheese, you would need something more. Apikurin is not good enough. You will need natilla and you will need kinuach. You will need to wash your hands and to clean out and to rinse your hands or your mouth, as we're going to say, and to clean out your mouth. If you ate chicken, another way of understanding Agra is when he says "Oif Gvinen Achol and Bafikurin," he means if you ate cheese and now you want to eat chicken, but not the other way around. The other way around, you can't eat it Bafikurin; you would need the tilu v'kinuach. Okay.
And why is that?
Because we could argue that after all, that even chicken, fine, it's not as greasy and fatty as meat, but nevertheless, it still has a certain amount of greasiness there, and it does, to a certain extent, get stuck between the teeth. And therefore, yes, the same basic idea. Okay. The Gemara tells Rabbi Yitzchok Breder Meshavshi Ikul Bei Ravashi. Rabbi Yitzchok Breder Meshavshi visited Ravashi's house. Isolat Bina Ochol. They brought him some cheese and he ate. Then Isolat Bistra. Then they brought him meat Ochol. He also ate it. V'lo Moshe Yodei, and he didn't wash his hands in between. Amri Le. So they said to him, V'altoni Agra Chamor Derav Abba Oifu Gvinen Echol and Bafikoren. What about this brisa of Agra that you can only eat chicken and cheese, Bafikoren, carelessly like that, without Natila Bikinoach, not meat. Oifu Gvinen Ein Bosu Gvinen Loi. Apparently that only applies to chicken, not to meat. Amalahu. So he answers them, Hani Mili Beleoya. That distinction between chicken and meat is only at night. Because at night you can't see whether there's anything left on your hands. I will be a mama, but since this is during the day, hochazina, I can see that there's nothing stuck on my hands, therefore I'm allowed to eat meat right afterwards. Now technically, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, you are technically allowed to eat meat right after cheese. But without anything in between, as we're saying over here, as long as you know that your hands are clean. The minhag exists to wait an hour between them. That's based on the Zohar. Because the Zohar talks very sharply about somebody who eats meat and cheese within the same hour. But that's a matter of meat after cheese. That's what I'm talking about. With that said, Maharam Rutenberg writes that the he says he used to make fun of people who wait after eating cheese before they ate meat. So yeah, because he said why bother? Come on, come on over here. It's clear that you don't need to wait. At most, you need to. The Zohar hadn't been publicized in his times yet. The Zohar hadn't been written by Rashi 1,000 years earlier, but it hadn't been publicized yet in the Maharam Rudenberg's time. So he says he used to laugh at. It came out later in the late 1200s, early 1300s. Anyway, the late 1300s, whatever. Anyway, the Maharam was in the 1200s, in the 13th century. Anyway, the point is that, so the Maharam says, then one time it happened, he says, that I ate some cheese, and later on I wanted to eat meat, and I found there was still cheese stuck between my teeth. So from then on, he says, I was machmir on myself that I would wait after cheese before meat as well. What's brought in halacha, apparently, even though he had rinsed, I guess, but I don't know, maybe he had bad teeth, I don't know. Whatever, anyway, the point is, maybe he had cavities, so like there was stuck in the cavity.
Waiting helps the cheese go away.
No, it will, actually, that's one reason we're going to discuss later for the reason for the waiting is, in fact, to allow it to, yeah, anyway, the point is, with that said, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that it depends whether it's hard cheese. If it's hard cheese, since that's more likely to get stuck between your teeth, then therefore you need to wait 6 hours. But the waiting we'll get to soon. Right now we're not dealing with the waiting yet, we're dealing with the rinsing. So there's a couple of different ways. I think one of them is if it's aged cheese, like for example Swiss cheese. Whatever, you have,
it's a little harder to get now,
yeah. And nowadays, I don't know if they really have so much aged cheeses aren't sold as much, at least not kosher cheeses. Anyway, okay, fine. Okay, Tanya, we're looking at a blister. What do you have to do between meat and milk? Beshamay says you have to wipe, or Beshul I'm madiach, and Beshul says you have to rinse. So my mekaneach or my madiach, what do we mean by wiping and what do we mean by rinsing? Do you mean that Beit Shammai says all you have to do is wipe out your mouth in a way that we're going to see through now, you wipe it out, and Beit Shammai would not require you to also use some kind of liquid like water, which Rashi learns that kinuach is better than hadocha. Wiping it out by eating something, as Gemara is going to say in a minute, is better than rinsing. So therefore, Beit Shammai would say that you need mekaneach, and you don't need the lesser madiach. Or Beit Hillel madiach v'leiboy mekaneach. And Beit Hillel would say that you need madiach, that kinuach is not enough. In other words, that would be the opposite way of looking at it than Beit Shammai. Would we say that Beit Shammai is saying kinuach is better, and Beit Hillel is saying hadocha is better, is a stronger thing.
Hadocha
is rinsing. The problem with that is elah do amar abzera and kinuach pe'elah b'pas. What about this? That abzera says that the only valid way of wiping out your mouth is by eating some bread. What does that mean? Come on, to Beit Shammai. Are you going to tell me abzera is saying like Beit Shammai? The halacha is not like Beit Shammai. The halacha is like Beit Hillel as usual. So obviously, it can't mean that that's what they mean. No, this is what it means is Beit Shammai says you need kinuach, you do not need madiach, all you need is kinuach, even though kinuach is not as good as madiach, Beit Shammai says all you need is that, it's a white, or Beit Hillel ach madiach, Beit Hillel would say that it's not good enough to just do kinuach, you also need to do madiach, you need to do both of them. And therefore, Havilah, Mekula B'Shammai, Mekula B'Shammai. It's another case where B'Shammai would be Mekul, B'Shammai would be Machmer. And so Abzera wants to inform us. Both of them are telling us that you need kinuach. The question is, how do you define kinuach? And Abzera is telling us by eating a piece of bread. So the question is, Velusniya Gabakula Bishama Bhumi Bisilo. In that case, if this is another case where Bishama is Mako and Bisil is Mahmer, why don't we have it in the official list of things in the Sefta Adias, where you have the whole list of these kind of cases? Now, Ella, so no, we have to explain the machlokas differently. Bishama Ami Makaneach Bahu Adin Lamadiach. What it is Bishama is saying, oh, you can wipe, but you could eat. It's changing the interpretation because it wouldn't work, because it's not an analysis. So therefore, what it would mean is Beit Shammai would say, Mekadeach lehu adin lemadiach. Beit Shammai would say, you have to wipe your mouth by eating something. You also have to rinse out your mouth. So they didn't mention it because they consider kinuach to be the stronger thing. So you need the stronger thing and along with the weaker thing. Or the silver would say the other way around. Hadacha, rinsing is the stronger thing. You also, though, by the way, do need mekaneach. You also need to rinse. You also need to wipe. And therefore, mara machadu, like twiggy. So they're both saying the same thing. They're just they're coming from the different theoretical viewpoints. Which one is the stronger one? Which one is the weaker one? Therefore, which one are they mentioning? And but both of them agree that you need to do both of them. Okay, Tosfos learns the beginning of the discussion a little bit differently. According to Rashi, we said that we started with the assumption that the Shammai says Kinuach is stronger, and the Tosfos says Hadacha is stronger. Tosfos learns that not. The Gemara knew to begin with that Hadacha is stronger. We thought that the Shammai meant all you need is Kinuach. You don't need the stronger Hadacha. And Basil would say all you need is Hadacha. So the problem again was that Reb Zera is mentioning what kinuach is. He says kinuach involves eating bread. According to that way of looking at it, still only Beit Shammai would say you need kinuach. So why would Reb Zera have to define it for us? And therefore, eventually, the Gemara reaches the point that we said that both of them agree. You need to do both. Both of them agree you need to do both. It's just one of them mentioned one and the other one, and the other one mentioned only the other one.
The question was?
According to Tosfos, the Gemara knew to begin with that Hadacha is stronger than Kinuach.
Right.
But we can't say it means that Beshamai says you only need Kinuach and Besilo says you only need Hadacha. Because again, why is Reb Zera defining what Kinuach is for us? It's not relevant to know since the Halacha is not like Beshamai anyway. And therefore, after a little back and forth, the Gemara ends up saying what we said, that they both hold that you need to do both of them. They're stating it in different ways, but they both agree you need to do the same thing, that you need to do both. Kinuach and Hadacha. They're arguing which one's stronger, but nevertheless, the fact is you need to do both. The posts can talk about, for pretty much all of them agree, that it doesn't matter the order. You can do either Kinuach or Hadacha first. It doesn't really matter. There are some of them who argue maybe you should do kinuach first and then you use the hadacha to get rid of any crumbs that are left after the kinuach. Kinuach, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, involves eating some kind of food, some kind of solid food. So therefore, maybe you should use hadacha afterwards to get rid of the bits of it. But most of the posts can say it doesn't matter.
Is it valid for hard cheese as well as soft cheese?
So we're talking over here what you need to do between one thing and the other.
Okay.
So when it comes to meat and then milk, as we're going to say soon, then you do need more than that. You need to wait a certain amount of time.
When
it comes to meat and then later on milk, then you need to wait a certain amount of time.
Right.
So yes, primarily we're talking about over here after milk, before meat. In principle, alpi halacha, you don't need to wait at all. Alpi the zoya, we wait an hour. So therefore, if you don't want to wait at all, then you need this kinuach b'hadacha business. Given that...
So what about cheese, then?
What about cheese?
It says primarily we're talking about milk and meat.
Milk, I mean milk and dairy.
Milk is not anything dairy.
Okay, the word, okay, when you talk to a yid and he says, we're not allowed to eat milk and meat together.
Milk,
okay, fine, dairy. Okay, fine, but fine. The point is that after you ate milk, in order to eat fleishik, if you don't want to wait an hour, you need kinuach b'hadacha. The we who wait an hour is not really as relevant anyway, but
if you
you don't have to, right? If you find some between your teeth, though, then you should get it out first. You should at least brush your teeth to get rid of it first. It is relevant. This matter of kinuach b'hadacha is a little bit relevant as far as the Gemara tells us. We talked about it briefly yesterday. The Gemara tells us that eating fish and meat is not healthy together. So therefore, what do we do on Shabbos, for example, between the fish course and the meat course? We eat something and we drink something. So therefore, that's the kinuach b'hadacha. Okay, Gufa. Getting back to what we said, Amar Reb Zera, Ein Kinuach HaPeh Ela B'Pas. So we said Reb Zera says that Kinuach HaPeh involves only bread. So as the Gemara says, there are some conditions what kind of bread we're talking about. The Hani Mili B'Dechiti. First of all, that only works if it's wheat bread. Avo B'Desari Loi, but if it's barley bread, it doesn't work. Because barley bread, Rashi says, crumbles more in the mouth. So therefore, the whole point is you want something that's going to clean out the mouth. It's going to, as you're chewing it, it's going to clean out. And the barley bread is too soft. And then it's not, I don't know. Even if it's wheat bread, it also, we don't say, in order for it to work, we didn't say that it works. Ela b'kira. only if the bread is cold, not cold as in frozen, but in other words, not in other words, hot out of the oven. Avo b'chamima, but if it's hot bread, mishter shatri, then it doesn't work either because it softens and spreads out. You eat bread fresh out of the oven, and yeah, it becomes it's like still doughy kind of. So therefore, again, it doesn't really do a good job cleaning out the mouth.
But it's delicious.
Yeah, maybe even bahani mili b'rakicha. And another condition is we're talking only about soft bread, avo ba'akusha, but if it's stale bread, once, then it doesn't work, because for the same reason, it also breaks up into crumbs, and it's too hard, and it doesn't do a good job of scraping away the stuff left inside the mouth. V'hilchasa, however, the bottom line halacha is not really like all those details. B'chol mili havi kinuach, actually with any kind of food is considered valid kinuach, levamikimcha tamri v'yarka, except for flour. And the pasture is like a flour over here, not, I mean, not just like flour like you buy out of a 5-pound bag in the store. You don't usually eat that by itself. The pasture, I guess, it means also like small, like granola or something like that. I don't know. Tamri, dates, the yarka, and vegetables. Those things are too soft to do a good job cleaning out the mouth.
What's the relevance about dates and
that's what we just said. Those things are too soft, so you can't use those.
They help you do through quinoa.
So those are not good for quinoa. But anything else, bread of any kind, whether it's wheat or barley, whether it's hard or soft, et cetera, and the same thing any other food. Bominir of Asi Mir of Yechon. Okay, so now Rav Asi asks Rav Yechon, Kama Yish have been Bosel of Gvina? How long do you have to wait after eating meat before you eat cheese? And again, cheese, we mean any kind of milk over here. So Rabbi Yechanan says, nothing. You don't have to wait. That's one thing I understand. Hold on. It's like, my ass, Amy, is that so? Don't we see that Rav Chista said, now, of course, Rabbi Yechanan and Rav Chista are able to argue with each other, but Rav Chista was a Talmud of Rabbi Yechanan. So we're going to assume that Rav Chista is not going to argue with Rabbi Yechanan unless we have a reason to think so. And so we see that Rav Chista says, also lachol gvina. If you ate meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese afterwards. Gvina mutar lachol baster, but if you ate cheese, you're allowed to eat meat right afterwards. And the reason is, again, because actually you have, Rashi over here mentions a reason why should we be more machmer after meat before dairy, and versus the other way around. Rashi says the reason is because meat has fat and grease in it, so therefore it gets stuck in the mouth, and therefore you have like the taste is long lasting. So after a certain amount of time, it dissipates.
Before dairy?
If you ate meat and later on you want to eat dairy, the problem is that you have the fatty taste of the meat still in your mouth. So therefore, that's why you have to wait a certain amount of time. As opposed to after dairy, you don't have to, because in general, again, except maybe with hard cheese, which is longer lasting, with regular cheese or regular dairy, it's not so long lasting. The Rambam gives a different reason based on the next piece of Gemara over here that it has to do with pieces of meat that stay stuck between your teeth. After 6 hours, those are ready, and the saliva breaks them up enough that they can't really be considered meat anymore, or after however many hours we're going to see in the Gemara. I think you have some... Okay, if they do, again, then you have like Myron Rutenberg, you make sure to brush your teeth first, but ordinarily they don't. I think you have some to show them. We talk about also that the idea may be that it takes a certain amount for it to get digested, but that's not the general consensus, because so what if they're together in your stomach? The issue is to eat them together, not to have them in your right. All right. So anyway, so the question, so again, Rav Chista is saying that if you ate meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese afterwards. You have to wait. So how can we say that Rav Yochanan, who again was Rav Chista's Rebbe, that he would have said you don't have to wait at all? Ella, no. So we have to change. We have to correct the wording of Rav Asi's question. Kama Yishev in Grina Labasar, he didn't ask how much you have to wait after meat before cheese, but the other way around. How much do you have to wait after cheese before meat? And there he says nothing. All you need is kinuach v'hadocha. All you need at most is kinuach v'hadocha, as we were saying.
Then Grina Labasar
means that you ate cheese and now you want to eat meat. Okay. Gufa. So now getting back to what Rav Chista said, Om Rav Chista, Ocho Boso, Ocho Bachel Dvina, that if you ate meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese right afterwards. You have to wait a certain amount of time. Dvina Mutu Lecho Boso, but if you ate cheese, you're allowed to eat meat right afterwards. With Kinoach HaDacha. Om Alerim, Acha Ba Yosef, Rav Chista, so Rav Acha Ba Yosef, Ask Rav Chista, Boso Shebein HaShinayim Mahu. What about if you have meat stuck between your teeth? Is that considered meat to the extent that you would have to take that. You would have to take that out. You'd have to pick that out from between your teeth, and only then would you be able to. And only then would you be able to eat meat. And would you be able to eat the dairy? Toriyame. So Rav Chista answers Rav Acha by Yosef with the pasuk Habaso Oydenu Ben Shineihem by Kivas Akava. It says that the meat was still between their teeth, and then Hashem struck them with a plague. So we see that meat between the teeth is considered meat. Is considered meat, and therefore you'd have to remove it. So again, according to Rashi, the primary reason why you have to wait is because of the fatty taste in your mouth. The meat between your teeth is not really the important thing. However, the Gemara is saying over here, if you have any, then you do have to remove it first. According to the Rambam, the whole reason for the waiting time after meat is because you tend to get stuck between the teeth.
Why Rashi doesn't make his pasuk make sense?
Because he says that the main thing is bosa moti shuman. However, if you also have because if you have meat stuck between the teeth, then that's a separate matter and you do need to remove it first. So that's not the primary reason for it. So the fact of the matter is the halacha is you need both. You need the waiting period as we're going to discuss, but also if after the waiting period you still find there's meat stuck between the teeth, then you do need to remove it first.
But not the other way around.
Alma Ma'ukva, right. Alma Ma'ukva, I'm not apologies, right. Alma Ma'ukva, so Ma'ukva says, Anola regarding this particular matter of how long to wait after meat, I am like vinegar, the son of wine, relative to my father. In other words, my father was on a higher level than me as far as this particular issue. De'ilu Abba ki hava ochel bisra ha'idna, because my father would do like this. If he ate meat at a certain time today, he wouldn't eat dairy until the same time the next day. He would wait 24 hours. No, 24 hours, mess less. Yeah. The ilu anna, whereas I, Ma'ukva, am not so machmer. I don't eat at the current meal that I'm at. But I do eat dairy. I will eat dairy at the next suda. So now, how do we define? So Tosfos says over here that it means we don't mean necessarily the different times of day when you have a suda, which you typically have one in the morning and one in the evening. In those days, the usual thing was to eat two meals a day. Rather, Tosfos says that actually we're talking about even. If you finished one meal, you cleared the table and you benched, then Tosfos learns you would be allowed to eat dairy right away. You wouldn't eat. In other words, Tosfos is learning. The Gemara is not mentioning an actual waiting period over here. The Gemara is just telling us that it can't be at the same suda. On the other hand, the Rambam says that the 6 hours comes from the Rambam. The Rambam explains that the typical time between sudas is 6 hours. And Mepharshim explain, especially on the basis of the Gemara talks about, in a couple of places, in Shabbos and Sochim, that the Merchachamim used to eat their first meal of the day during the 6th hour of the day. The Gemara says most people would eat their morning meal during the 4th hour of the day, let's say 9 to 10 a.m. on a day when the sun rises at 6 and sets at 6. Then the 4th hour of the day would be between 9 and 10. Most people would eat breakfast then. Tamer Chachamim would wait another 2 hours. The Al-Tadeva gives it in Tanya as an example of Iskafia, that you hold yourself back and spend the time learning more before you eat breakfast. And then when you eat your other main meal of the day, they would eat it around the end of the day, around Shkia, which is the 12th hour of the day. So there's your 6 hours. Whereas Ma'ukva took
like 1, 9 to 10?
The Tamer Chachamim eat between 11 and 12.
Yeah,
and then it's six hours, regular people eat between 9 and 10, but the Talmid Chachamim would eat between 11 and 12, let's say, and then they eat again in the evening between 5 and 6, so there's your 6 hours. Nowadays you have most people follow the Rambam's Shita and wait 6 hours. You have a few places where they have the minhag 1 hour, which is similar to what Tosfos is saying over here. It just can't be in the same meal. And you have some places where they have a minhag of 3 hours, although it's not really so. German Jews in particular, Yekes, have that minhag, although it's not really so clear where to wait 3 hours between meat and milk. But where 3 hours comes from, it's not so clear. Okay, but anyway, so there exists such a minhag.
The Rambam
says 6 hours.
The Rambam.
Yeah. The Ramah, I don't think says one way or the other. Okay. I think the Ramah says that in his time the most widespread minhag was to wait 1 hour. So later on the minhag developed, the spread to do 6 hours, right. Okay, as far as my Uqba's father, why is he doing 24 hours? So one explanation is because he also figured it's from one Suda to another, but he took the view a big Suda can be only once a day. You don't know, a Suda doesn't mean from a Suda to a Suda, let's say from breakfast till dinner. It can mean from one big Suda until the next big Suda, and typically those would be 24 hours apart. So therefore he was not going to. Now, with that said, though, it does say in Shulchan Aruch that if you ought, besides that you have to have the waiting period, you also have to have that they're not actually in the same meal. So for example, Shavuos, we have a milchik soda, but then we actually have to bench first and then wait and then have the pleasure soda, because otherwise we'd be in the same soda, right? So you do have to bench in between, and there is actually some discussion among the Achronim in that case. Does the 6 hours count from when you finished eating meat or from when you benched? You know, you think of it, a Shabbos afternoon meal, for example, you have your cholent, and you're only benching an hour or so later. When do you count the 6 hours from? You have actually different opinions among the Achronim about that. I don't know. You have some people who do it one way and some people who do it the other way. I don't know. Okay. All right. Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel, since we're mentioning this, that my Uqba,
that means that you cannot eat really shalosh sudas.
Well, it would mean that if you can eat shalosh sudas. Well, it would mean, in other words, that if you're going to have a milchik shalosh sudas, then it means it only works on a long Shabbos afternoon during the summer when you have 6 hours or more from when you finished your Shabbos meal, your main Shabbos second meal until shalosh sudas. Okay. Mefoshim also asked the question. So if Ma'ukva himself recognizes that he's not doing as great as his father did, that his father was more machmer on it than he's calling himself chala bachamri, he's calling himself vinegar, the son of wine. So why doesn't he just take on his father's minhag? And among the ideas that are given in answer to that is basically you don't just take on minhagim as just like, you know, sam. If you're a chumrah should be something that you feel is going to enhance your avodah. If you're just doing it, sound copying somebody else, then it's not really the appropriate thing to do. But that's if it's a minhag that's based on halacha. Here it was a chumrah. I mean, it's also to a certain extent based on halacha, but whatever. It's a chumrah, and a chumrah therefore, so you don't just copy chumras. You see whether this chumrah is something that enhances your avodah. I mean, if not, they bring something in this connection. I think from the Malach Rezhensky, but I don't remember that along the lines of if a person just copies the chumras of his rebbe without actually, you know, trying to connect with them or whatever, then it's a form of then there's a subtle form of avodah zarah. Subtle form, but still, yeah. So another example, the Gemara gives another example now of another Amora who says on himself that he's like vinegar compared to wine relative to his father in a different area. Amar Shmuel, Ana l'ha milsa chala b'chamer l'gabe abba. So Shmuel says in a different regard, I'm like vinegar compared to wine relative to my father. De'ilu abba have a sayur nichsi treiz mani b'yoma, because my father would check over his nechosim, his real estate, his properties, twice a day. So twice a day he would go around and check if everything is in good shape, if there's anything that needs to be fixed or improved or whatever. So he would do that twice a day. I only do it once a day. His house, his garden, his fields, his whatever, yeah. So the guy with that said, actually the Chofetz Chaim brings on this that actually it is meant not only begashmius but also beruchnius. That the Shmuel is saying that my father would do on him, he'd sit down and do a cheshbon nefesh and think where he's holding an avoda and what needs to be improved twice a day, whereas I only do it once a day. As far as
three times a day,
are you talking about as far as davening?
As far as everything.
No, how do you see we do it? Where do you
no,
think
we need it? You
that
do
may
it.
Be. That may be. Well, no, because Shmuel is saying I'm a lower level than my father. So if Shmuel himself felt that he needed it only once, then okay.
He was on a high level because he did it less.
No, because he's saying I'm vinegar compared to wine to my father. To do it more would be on a higher level.
So
okay, I don't know. So that's, but that's the question. He did it less because he didn't feel that they, he didn't feel that it's enhancing his avoida to do it any more times than that. To, you know, there is also, I mean, you know, you look at, for example, in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe warns about, you know, just starting to take stock of your, of where you hold an avoida just at random. You're very likely to fall into depression, realizing, you know, I'm very far from where I should be. And that's deadly to avoid us. So therefore, you know, the Alter Rebbe recommends that there should be certain times that you set aside for that kind of thing. So Shmuel, it may have been like that. With that said, if we're talking about a gashmiyistika thing, checking over his property, one explanation from Avilio Jessler is something along the lines of that Shmuel's father was on, because he was on a higher level, he could do more hishtadlos. He could do more physical efforts to check over his property twice a day, and it wouldn't show a lack of emunah. Whereas Shmuel, not being on such a high level, if he were to do it twice a day, he's more likely to fall into the trap of thinking, you know why everything's successful? Because I'm looking it over. So therefore, he would only do it once a day. That's hard to say it of Shmuel, obviously, but we're saying that's one idea why Shmuel felt that he can't do it as often as his father, because he has, for him, it would be more likely to fall into that mistake. Because the fact of the matter is, they're mentioning my father was on a higher level, and I haven't reached that level. Okay. Shmuel the Taimei. So Shmuel is going according to his own svara. The Amar Shmuel, because we find Shmuel had an expression. Man de soyer nichse kol yoyma. Anybody who checks over in the chosin every day, mashkach istira, will find an istira. An istira is a kind of coin, meaning, in other words, that a person will find that something that needs to be fixed, and thereby he'll save money. So we see that Shmuel held that it's important to check these things over once a day. So the Gemara gives an example. Abaya have a soyer nichse kol yom of a yomer. So indeed, Abaya followed that advice and used to check over his nechasim once a day. Yom echad poga ba'arise. One day he met up with his oris, a sharecropper. The dori paska de ufi. This guy was carrying a bundle of wood, which he was intending to steal. Amale, so Abaya caught him red-handed. Hani lahecha, where exactly are you taking these? Amale lebeima, well, the guy didn't have a choice, so he claimed, now I'm only bringing it to your house. Really, Abaya realized exactly what's going on over here. Amale, so he said to him, Krakid mucher abanon, you should know that abanon are way ahead of you. The Shmuel, who gave that advice to check over your nechosim every day, so this way I followed that advice, otherwise you would have stolen this from me and I wouldn't have realized. So the chachamim are way ahead of you. Go ahead and bring it. Basically, telling him, you know, fine, bring it to my house. Next time, be aware you're being watched.
I'll be watched.
Yeah.
If you check this twice a day, he's going to know something's missing.
He wants to know it ahead of time.
I guess there were certain times a day when he knew the artist was going to be around. The artist is not necessarily living on the property. He's coming at a certain time and doing his work, and then, yeah. Okay, maybe. I don't know. All right. Actually, I think the Chofetz Chaim continues with this thing about that we're also talking about Cheshbon and Nefesh Beruchnius. He says the Oris over here represents the Yetzer Hara. Is trying to convince Abaya that I'm trying to get you to do such and such, but it's for your good. Hani lebeimar, I'm bringing this to your house. It's all for your benefit. And Abaya tells him, the Chacham are already wise to you. We understand your tricks. Rav Asi have a sayu nichse kol yoyma. Rav Asi also used to check over his properties every day, but nothing happened every day. There's nothing new to report. Amar, so he says to himself, Heichan ninu kol hani iskiri demar Shmuel. Shmuel said, if you check it over every day, you're going to find an iskira. Where's all these iskiras? I've been checking every day, and it seems to be a waste of time. Well, Yom Chab, one day, Chazet Sinoda de Bidka Ba'are. One day he saw that the wall that was holding back the water of the canal, the dam, whatever, had a hole in it, and water is spilling into it, and it'll flood his field. Sinoda de Bidka. Sinoda means a pipe, but it means also a stream of water. The bidka that was coming through a hole, ba'are in his land. Shakli leglime, so he took off his coat, karse, and rolled it up, osvib agaba, and stuck it into the hole as a temporary fix, as a temporary stop. Well, obviously that's not going to last. Ramakola, he yelled out for other people to come. Also, Inshi Sachrua, and other people came and helped him to close up the hole. So he said to himself, and in fact, Shitim Kobethis and Hagoy Tabak add the word Omar, the now Rabasi said, oh, look at that. Ashkatino, the whole Istiri, the Mar Shmuel. After all, so now I found all these Istiris of Shmuel all at once, because if I hadn't been here checking on it, then I would have suffered a tremendous loss. So we see, in other words, the point is, like I was saying, it's not necessarily every day you'll find something, but at least if you're in the habit of checking, well, sometime you'll find some big thing that that checking like this, Begashnias and Berukhnias saves you from. So in other words, you have, there was a canal over there, there's a canal running between the fields where you go and draw water from it to water your fields, or every so often you open up the dams and let the water come in or whatever, but like this, there was a hole there, and therefore it was going to start flooding. Have you ever been to Holland where they have all the canals and all the dikes over there where if those were to get breached, then half the country gets flooded. So this is a similar idea. Wait a minute. What, to check it over? Because you know exactly what you're you know what to look for.
You go to Holland, you got very big toll booths.
Okay. Getting back to the matter of washing, and by the way, I should mention in the Gemara that we were mentioning before about Mandiach and the Kaneach, we were assuming, and this is how Rashi and Tosfos learn that Kinuach definitely means cleaning out your mouth by eating bread. He said when we talked about Hadochah, we were assuming it also means rinsing out your mouth, as in with drinking water or some other liquid. There are Mephoshim who explain, and some of them, for example, that Amma may hold this way, that Hadochah actually means washing your hands to make sure that there's no grease or whatever stuck onto them before you eat the other thing.
Well, Kinuach means cleaning your mouth with bread. What do you do on Pesach?
Okay, well, on Pesach, many people, you eat matzah, or you eat something else.
Realistically,
a lot of people don't eat milchik much during Pesach anyway. It's hard enough turning over your kitchen for one thing. Yeah. In my household, for example, we don't have milchik over Pesach.
But if you do the same thing.
So first of all, you could always wait 6 hours. Again, Kinuach Bahadotha is strictly speaking, if you're not going to be waiting, we who wait 6 hours after meat and 1 hour after milk anyway, it's kind of a non-issue.
Your kids don't drink milk all day.
Yeah, pretty much. We have cereal. A lot of them like to have cereal with other liquids anyway, with orange juice or whatever. Yeah.
This includes goat milk and other types of milk.
Milk is milk. Yeah, any kind of milk. Okay, so since we mentioned about washing and about cleaning up between milk and meat and vice versa, Omer of Idi Ba'oven, Omer of Yitzchak Ba'ashian, Mayim Rishonim Mitzvah, the water that you wash with before the meal, for the Tillis Yadayim for bread, is mitzvah. It's a mitzvah midrabanan. Ba'achronim Choyva. Mayim Achronim is a Choyva. A Choyva, Rashi learns, is a stronger requirement than a mitzvah. So basically, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. Mine b'shonim v'achronim poiva. A braita says that washing before the meal and mine achronim are both choiva and soyim b'shus. And washing between one course and another. Remember, in those days they ate with their fingers, so their fingers got quite dirty. So they'd wash their hands between courses as well. Those are b'shus. So in other words, the question is, Rav Ibi Ba'ovin is saying that there is distinguishing Mayim Rishonim on Mitzvah and Mayim Achronim as Choyva. The Braita is calling them both Choyva. The answer is Mitzvah, the Gabri Rishus Choyva Korila. The question is, is it Mitzvah or is it Choyva? The answer is Mitzvah, the Gabri Rishus Choyva Korila. The answer is that there's three different levels. There's Mitzvah, there's Choyva, there's Mitzvah, and there's Rishus. Relative to Mayim and Soyim, which are only a Rishus, the other ones can be called Choyva. They are, in principle, only a mitzvah, mitzvah l'shmoyer d'yavei chachamim, but relative to mayim and soyim, they're important enough to be called choyva, an absolute obligation, because relative to it, they are an absolute obligation.
Why are they an absolute
obligation? We have to figure out. We're going to see why. Gufa, so getting back, well, the Gemara is going to say later, because Melach is doing this, because you have going salt that can be in the food and can blind a person if he touches his eyes with hands that got dirty with it. So therefore, that's why Mayim Achronim are choyva. Nowadays, not everybody is so careful about Mayim Achronim, partly because it says in Shulchan Aruch, because we don't have Melach Zoymus by us. So yeah.
if it wasn't a lot for Miller's bonus, we...
Then we'd have to be more careful with it. Gufa, getting back to the Braise had said, Maim Rishonim Vachronim Ploga, washing before the meal if you need bread, and Maim Achronim are a requirement, and Ployim Rishulis, the water in between, between one course and the next, is only a Rishulis. Another difference is between them, Rishonim Notman Ben Bekli Ben Agabe Karka, Maim Rishonim, before the meal, you can wash whether into a keli, into a basin, or on the ground. Achronim ain't notan el bakli. My achronim, you're only supposed to wash into a keli, into a bowl underneath. But amrila ain't notan el agave karka. Others say that no, you should do it. You should only wash them onto the ground. I think Rosh says my benai. What's the practical difference between them? The answer is ikabenai or kinsa. The difference would be what if, for example, you have like sawdust or wood chips or whatever on the ground. So if you say that you're supposed to do it into a keli, that's not a keli, so therefore that's no good. You can't wash my machronim over that. If you say that you're only supposed to do it onto the ground, then it's good enough. It's good enough if you have sawdust or whatever over there, then it's also okay, and you can wash on top of that.
Are you implying that you cannot do it directly on the ground?
The Gemara is going to mention later on that you're not according to what it is Mayim Achronim directly on the ground. There's a ruach ra that rests on them. Therefore, according to that, you're not supposed to. Therefore, if you put them directly on the ground, then you have a problem of ruach ra. So if you have chips or whatever over there, then it's fine. Then it's not directly on the ground.
So what do you do sukkahs, for instance?
I mean, many people wash Mayim Achronim into a container anyway. Many people have those two-piece Mayim Achronim things, and therefore you're washing into a keli and fine. But if you're washing on the ground, I mean, Lamaisa nowadays people do only a tiny drop anyway, barely any of it lands on the ground. But okay. Another difference, Mayim Rishonim Noisman Ben Bechamin Ben Bechonin, the washing before the meal, you can wash either with hot water or cold water. Achronim Ein Noisman El Bechonin, but when it comes to Mayim Achronim, you have to wash dafka with cold water, because hot water softens the hands, and therefore the grease and everything gets absorbed into them. Right. They don't do a good job of removing the grease and the dirt from what you ate.
Now
that
you use hot water, it comes out.
But use hot water and soap. Right. Here we're talking about Mayim Achronim. It's just hot water without soap.
Well,
one second. So the Mayim Rishonim Noisman Ben Bechamin Ben Bechonin, this that was saying that you can wash before bread, whether with hot water or cold water. Amar of Yitzchak by Yosef, Amar of Yanai, Lo Shonu El Sha'ena Yad Seledis Behin. That would only apply if the water is not so hot that your hands are going to get burned by them. Avala Yad Seledis Behin, but if it's Yad Seledis Behin, which the post-game nowadays considered to be about 113 degrees or so, Ein Noisman Behin, then you're not allowed to wash before bread with them, because Rashi says nishtanu mitoras mayim. They're not regular water anymore.
From mitzvah,
how much? I don't know, but you're not supposed to wash with mitzvah anyway. I think the Gemara is going to talk about it later. And one reason is because not just because they're hot, but also because they have minerals in them, and therefore it's like it's not regular water. So it's like it has a bad taste to it or whatever.
No.
Okay. The Ikka de Machin Lase. For on the other hand, there are those who learn this distinction between hot and cold water regarding the Sefer, that we said Achroinim Ein Noitzlin El B'Tzonin. We said that Mayim Achroinim you can only wash with cold water. Ava B'Chamin Loi, implying you can't wash Mayim Achroinim with hot water. So the second version is Amar Rabbi Yitzchok Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yana, Lo Shonu El Asha Yad Tzeledes Behen. When we say you can't do Mayim Achroinim with hot water, we mean water that's Yad Tzeledes Behen. Ava Eina Yad Tzeledes Behen Noitzlin. But if it's not Yad Tzeledes Behen, if it's not quite that temperature, you are allowed to wash Mayim Achroinim, okay? Miklau, which would imply the Rishonim, that as far as Mayim Rishonim, water before washing, Afa Fisha Yad Tzeledes Behen, even if it's Yad Tzeledes Behen Mutter, then according to the second version, you would be allowed to wash, we would be allowed to wash for bread with hot water, even though it's Yad Tzeledes Behen.
Mayim Rishonim.
Mayim Rishonim, because the second version, as usual in the Gemara, the halacha is, as usual, the halacha is like the second version of the Gemara, so therefore it comes out that washing before bread, you are allowed to wash with hot water. And then Mayim Achronim, though, you're only supposed to wash with cold water or at most lukewarm water.
Even though these days,
Mayim Achronim, I mean, nowadays really more symbolic thing than anything else, but still, yeah.